This is Dissecting Dragons, a speculative fiction podcast for writers and readers by writers and readers.
Hello, and welcome to Dissecting Dragons, the speculative fiction podcast for writers and readers by writers and readers. I'm Madeleine Vaughan.
And I'm Jules Ironside. This week, Endgame, the legacy of the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Now, it goes without saying, but this episode is going to have spoilers for Avengers Endgame.
Yeah, this should so, be spoiler, and there'll be spoilers, and if you haven't seen it, or you haven't seen Captain Marvel or any of the others, there's spoilers, okay guys?
Yeah, highly recommend you go and watch before you listen to this episode, unless you don't care. To be honest, at this point, I don't know how you could have avoided spoilers.
Yes, but we don't want to deliberately add to them to make it worse, so consider yourself fairly warned.
Indeed. So, I was actually really late in seeing Endgame, so so much of it got spoiled for me before I actually saw it.
Oh no. I mean, I know you asked for one specific spoiler from me, but I was like, I'm literally biting my tongue for the last few weeks to not say anything to you.
Yeah, well, the thing is, like, I thought, I'm going to avoid it, and then I just look on my news feed on my phone and it would be like, major deaths, and list all the deaths, and I was like, oh, come on!
Yeah, this
but
is...
I saw these little hints.
Yeah.
And I finally went, I've got to know before I go into the cinema, so I just messaged Jules, like, Jules, does Tony Stark die? Yes, he does. Shit!
To be fair, it's kind of like today, this won't air for a couple of weeks, but today is the day the last Game of Thrones episode comes out in the UK, and I've just been staying offline all day because I don't want to know.
Yeah, I just sort of, again, it was my own news feed, as in like just the news feed, like news articles.
Yeah.
On my phone, where I was just there like, what's happening in the world today? Oh, for God's sake! Everything was spoiled for me, so yeah, I've already had a ton of spoilers for the end of Game of Thrones, so not much I can do about that. But yeah, today we're focusing on Avengers Endgame. I guess we should probably just start with general impressions. Did you enjoy it?
I did, actually, and I think in some ways some of that is the fact that it's such a good ensemble piece. And it gets the pacing right with the battles specifically, that it kind of dazzles you into not noticing the flaws straight away. But generally, yeah. I really enjoyed it, and I did feel overall that it pulled all the threads together. That's just a brief overview, in my opinion.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I think overall, I did enjoy it. It was well put together, and I felt like it could be cinematic triumph in terms of just the pacing, but also the visuals as well. It was impressive, and I did enjoy it, and I think they did justice to most of the characters.
Yeah, and I think that's the big thing that perhaps we take for granted, but we don't necessarily notice it as viewers. And that's the fact that they've managed 10 years of this cinematic universe, and pretty much every single story has been character-driven. Now, a couple of them have been a bit on the messy side, but if you compare that with DC and how they've tried to make those stories mostly their series of moments that look visually spectacular, but they're not character-driven, and therefore they're quite boring, some of them. I mean, aside from Wonder Woman... They're not really character-driven pieces, and I don't think they work as well. So it's a tremendous achievement to actually create this series of films and keep, in terms of character, even if you don't like where the characters have gone, keep it a character-driven narrative all the way through. And to do that on such a huge ensemble piece as Endgame, as you say, it is a cinematic triumph in that respect.
Yeah. No, absolutely. I completely agree. And I think that in terms of characterization, they really did manage to in character. they did some, they made some interesting choices, and we'll go through that. But I did feel there was no moment where I suddenly thought, oh, that didn't feel like something that that person would do. It all felt quite, what's the word? Not expected, but it didn't feel, you know, like anything was out of place. And the lines we had, and I feel like we also got enough screen time, considering how many characters there were, a humongous amount of characters. I think they got the balance right.
Yeah, I mean, we will get into the weeds on this in a minute. There were things that irritated me, but largely those were things that have irritated me through the entire 10 years of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and they are things that it just shows that if you have a slightly unstable beginning with certain issues, then you're going to have a slightly shoddy end with those issues too, because you've made a rod for your own back. So I'll be more explicit about that later. But, you know, overall, the film in itself was really, really good, and I was riveted. And even though it's a pretty damn long film for just explosions and stuff, which obviously there's more to it, but I wasn't bored. Whereas I went to the cinema to see Aquaman, and I actually fell asleep, and I still don't really know what happens in the middle part of that film. I don't normally fall asleep.
To be honest, you don't really need to know. You don't really need to know what happens in the middle. You can mostly put it all together. I missed large chunks of it, and I still felt like I watched too much.
Yeah, so no doubt I will see that again, but I don't feel that falling asleep for about an hour in the middle actually deprived me of much of the plot.
No. Love Jason Momoa, but I must say, no, it was exciting, and I really did enjoy it. And I laughed a lot in Endgame as well, which I always think that Marvel have done right. They've got some good humour in there too.
Small caveat, obviously the Marvel Universe, as incorporates the graphic novels, the comics, the fan fiction that's out there, we can't touch that today because that is too much material for us. I mean, we're
way too big.
We're only just going to be able to do a relatively comprehensive summation of the MCU. So please don't at us if we don't bring up something in the comics, because we know that not all of it's canon, but we're going off the films, okay, guys?
Yeah, we're literally just looking at the Marvel Cinematic Universe in the films that have been released. I'm well aware of how things differ in the comics, but and then in various TV shows and things like that. But today's episode is just about the Marvel Cinematic Universe, because we really don't have time to unpack all of that.
You know, give us about 12 weeks where we do daily podcasts. No, this isn't a suggestion at all, because we
we don't have time for that. Okay, all right. So we're going to go character by character there, particular little bit. Now, who do you want to start with, Jules?
Well, I will say, obviously, we can't do every single character who makes even the briefest briefest appearance in the film, simply because, again, it's a time constraint. So it's the ones who mostly move the plot on that we are going to be looking at, and the ones who clearly we're ending their character arc because they're passing the torch on to the younger. The newer characters, if you like, of the Avengers. So I think we should start with Tony Stark, because it began with Tony Stark.
Yeah. So, okay. I actually wonder whether we shouldn't finish with Tony Stark. But no, okay. Well, I'm happy to start with Tony Stark. Tony Stark started it all. And so it did feel rather appropriate for him to die.
Yeah, I mean,
we're
missing out a huge chunk of story there. I mean, obviously, the Avengers themselves didn't start with Tony Stark. Tony was approached by Nick Fury and then told he was unsuitable. But I think the successful Marvel movie, bearing in mind there were things like Daredevil, Elektra, weirdly, Blade. Blade was a successful Marvel movie.
Yeah, Blade was the first, yeah. But the thing is, Iron Man was the first film in the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Yeah, the one that really, you know, lit the original torch, I think is fair. And, you know, you'd have difficulty.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't the first Marvel film, but it was the first one in the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Yeah. Anyway, you wouldn't think that... if you think about it, what's really telling is the fact we say Tony Stark before we say Iron Man. So the character has managed to outlive the icon. That is a humongous achievement. That is huge. When you say Superman, you might say Clark Kent, but it's unlikely. And I'm not picking on DC here, guys. It's just that's the one that popped to mind. Batman, I don't necessarily care about Bruce Wayne. I don't really care about the guy who doesn't wear the mask. You know, and in a way, you're not supposed to. Not really, in terms of the films, that is. But the fact that we go, Tony Stark, it's like, oh yeah, he happens to be Iron Man as well. It's just a throwaway second thought. And that's huge in terms of character development.
Yeah, and I think that they did actually really, it was nice because a lot of the scenes with Tony Stark in them kind of mirrored scenes from the first movie as well. I mean, to the point that they even had the I am Iron Man line, which was incredibly significant because a big part of the, of Tony's month throughout the movies has been about identity, and he's had these massive crises about what he can do or who he is without the suit, and it's the fact that that Iron Man and Tony Stark are synonymous with each other, and in the end Tony Stark was the powerful one. He was Iron Man. It was nothing to do with the suit. It was all to do with him. And I did feel like they did that very well. I did enjoy his role. I know some people who really dislike him as a character, though.
I can understand that, because the thing is, he's not your typical hero. He's not Noble Light. He is... And he starts off as a selfish, self-involved narcissist, and he doesn't really lose those traits. They just expand enough that he gradually brings other people into his worldview and starts valuing them, until at the very end of Endgame, where he values everybody else. Everybody else is valuable as well, whether he likes them or not, whether he wants them around him all the time or not. You know, the world itself is valuable. Because when you think he nearly pulls the self-sacrifice thing in, I think it's Avengers Assemble, isn't it?
Yeah.
But that was it felt like a very cynical move, as in he was doing it, but he wasn't doing it in the sense of, not in the same sense as he ends up doing it in Endgame. In Endgame, it's very much a case of, I've weighed the scales here. I'm no more valuable than anyone else. I just happen to be in the right place. Whereas in Avengers Assemble, it did feel kind of like an ego move as well.
Well, I don't know. I'm not sure I agree with that. I completely understand what you're saying, and I think it's, a pretty accurate kind of idea, but I'm not sure I agree. But I do understand what you mean, and I definitely agree that in terms of his role in the larger plot of life, in the grander scale of things, the first real moment of him suddenly going, oh God, things are a lot bigger than I thought, which caused the crisis, was when he did, he did make that self-sacrificing move where he was putting away that missile, and then he looked up and he saw how big everything was, and he kind of had a big panic, which sort of influenced pretty much the rest of everything. And ultimately, actually, his big panic was right, because that's what happened. Thanos came down and destroyed, half of every living creature. So you can kind of, he does have a very self-righteous moment where he's like, I told you this would happen. And you thought, you've made your point, but you understand why he's angry. But interestingly, I think the fact they decided to make him a parent in this one, it wasn't just about sort of, showing him, about making it extra painful. Like, oh, look what he's left behind. I think it was also about mellowing his character out, and about saying he's matured, he's changed, and he does actually have a lot to lose. this isn't some decision he's making as a bit of a maverick, as a little bit of a self-sacrificing person. Because there are times when he would have made very rash decisions with very little care for his own life, because he didn't really have, even though he was very narcissistic, he didn't actually love himself very much at all. He actually hated himself. And, you know, I think that actually if they'd had that sacrifice at another point, it would have been kind of like, well, actually, it's not that it's any less noble, but it's just a lot sadder. Whereas this felt quite conclusive. It was him making a decision for the betterment of everybody, and it had nothing to do with him as an individual.
He does still, you know, he never really completely gets over the narcissism. It's just he puts it into use in a better direction.
Yeah.
In my opinion. The idea of him being a parent, it's a sad parallel in some ways, because his dad died and left him young, and now he's dying and leaving his daughter young. His daughter, who's clearly going to be some sort of genius as well. But you can see that you can see that he's trying to be a much more engaged parent than his father was. So it's just one of those things, isn't it? And it's something very, very humanizing about that, in the sense of, I'm going to try to do better than my own parents did with my own children. And I perhaps understand my parents, I think, better, to be honest, for being a father.
Yeah, which I think it is important, you know, that he has that scene with his own father. And I think it was also, that should have been any kind of, that him meeting his own father and getting that closure, which he never had, it should have been obvious, therefore, that he was going to die. It's like, yep, we've given him closure. Nothing else for him to do now except die. And he does, and it's a fairly epic death. A part of me kind of still goes, I wish they could have just given him a happy ending. But I guess that was never going to be possible.
Let's face it, there are some characters who you can't keep them and have them not in the Avengers. You can have, say, Hawkeye retire, but you can't have Tony Stark retire, because the minute shit goes down, he's back in it again. He's proved he cannot retire, therefore he has to die. Anyway, let's move on to Captain America.
Yeah, I think probably one of the funniest things was Cap fighting himself. Steve Rogers fighting himself is funny on so many levels.
Funny moment, quite meta as well. Weirdly, Captain America hasn't always been a favourite character of mine, because I don't like the goody two shoes guys, but he's plausible, and Chris Evans does a really, really good job of bringing that character to life and making you root for somebody who is essentially a bit goody two shoes.
Yeah. It was a fantastic performance. He's a really good actor.
He's just done wonders with the character through all the films, I think. And I've kind of gradually started liking him more and more. And in the end, he's kind of become this... he's not really full-on chaotic good or anything, but he's not lawful for the sake of being lawful either.
No. His ending was both satisfying and at the same time, I don't know, what did you think about his ending?
I liked his ending. I love the fact, and obviously we're on spoiler territory, so we're just going to come out and say it. I love the fact that he's always been this person who puts everybody else first. He's the complete opposite of Tony Stark in that way. He's not selfish at all. He never really does anything that's just for himself. And then he has the opportunity to actually love himself first and do something for him. And it involves, like, completely breaking the space-time continuum, in my opinion, as a nerd, closet physicist. But ignoring the plausibility of all that, the fact that he goes back and manages to have a life with Peggy Carter is amazing. It's just a case of, no, that really worked for me. And yeah, okay, he gets to have some closure that way. And he lives an entire life with her, quietly. And then comes back old, which is another way of retiring or killing off a character.
Yeah, and I did really like the fact that he hands over that shield to Sam Wilson.
Yeah,
which was a great way of bringing in the new Captain America. Yeah, I thought that was fantastic. And I admit I was very happy he got to be with Peggy. I felt that that was significant and very important. And I guess a part of me was a little bit sad because it confirms that this is someone who never moved on. He never found his place in the modern world, which I think kind of undoes a little bit of you know, some of his development in previous movies. And yet it is still satisfying, and I did like it. And again, I really do like the passing on of the shield. That was very significant. Though I do have to ask, how did it get fixed? Who fixed it?
Well, apparently Thor can have Mjolnir back, so meh.
Yeah, well, I guess that was also a problem, is that, yeah, Thor has Mjolnir back, and I'm just there like, but what about past Thor? Does past Thor not need Mjolnir?
Yeah, let's be honest here. The time travel plot in Endgame does not bear up very well to too much scrutiny. So don't look too closely at that. It might break.
Well, it really doesn't. But the funny thing, of course, is Loki taking the Tesseract and disappearing. And I'm like, well, that literally changes everything in the future. But apparently it doesn't.
See, I was watching that bit. And I was thinking of you when I was watching that bit, because it's the look on his face. He doesn't say anything. He's just sort of, oh, you guys are going to fight. You're not looking at, okay, then I guess I'll just take this. Then I was just sat there going, I'm thinking of Madeline right now, because this is a scene that's got Madeline written all over it.
The yoink. Off I go. No, I did enjoy the whole timey-wimey kind of stuff. And to be honest, again, it should have been very obvious. A moment that it's like, yeah, we can travel through time. And you've got Steve like, oh, really? that's convenient. So, I was happy for Steve. And I did feel that that was a nice way of closing his story. Like, we've had Tony and Steve. Good ways of closing their stories.
Okay.
Now, Thor.
This is where I hit my first sticky wicket, because on one end, you know, in the original Thor films, yeah, they're wonderfully entertaining, but it's not till Thor Ragnarok that you really get a sense of his character, and it's funny and it's multidimensional, and he's someone who struggles with his own identity and you know, whether he is the weapon or whether he is only the weapon that he holds, kind of thing, whether he really is worthy. Yeah. He struggles with a sense of his own worthiness and whether he can live up to being, you know, Odin's son. Then you get Thor in Endgame, and yes, it was funny, but it was also really kind of a bit borderline offensive as well. Because, okay, guys.
Yeah, I mean, the whole joke is, oh yeah, so this is someone who's horrifically been traumatised, and look, now he's fat. How funny.
He's let himself go. You know, the God of Thunder, he used to be this 6'5" Adonis, and now he's put on some extra pounds. And on a very shallow interpretation, yeah, that's hilarious. But on a non-shallow examination of that, what you're saying there is that the fact that he's not how you would see him in the original films, it makes him less valuable. Mm. He's a laughingstock. He's a god who is less of a person because he's now fat and hangs out with a bunch of surfer dudes. Or, you know,
yeah,
sofa surfer dudes anyway. And it's just a case of, I can well see the original Nordic gods getting a bit like thick around the waist when they're not out pillaging and that, because they were supposed to just sit around drinking beer all time. So yeah, maybe.
Well, I mean, even canonically, some of his mates were pretty,
yeah,
well-rounded, you know.
But in the film, it's not presented as a positive thing, and it's not presented as, this is someone who's literally lost his planet and almost his entire race and is being forced into a position of kingship that he doesn't feel prepared for at all. So let's make a fact joke.
I mean, the other thing is that he kind of gives up being a kingship to, you know, he gives up his right to rule to Valkyrie, which, okay, fine. And then he's going off with the Guardians of the Galaxy, which means that, yeah, we might get a little bit more Thor. So I'm happy about that. But the fact of the matter was, I feel like For the most part, I didn't mind the way that they wrote him, because I think they still managed to get some of his new humour, if that makes sense. And his slight awkwardness, and you know, I felt they managed to maintain that, which was good. But I also feel like this is someone who literally came into ruling. He just found out that, you know, Asgard is a people, not a place. And again, I can totally understand, you know, his first few seconds as king and everybody gets killed. But at the same time, I just feel like he just kind of gave up on being a king way too easily. And, you know, maybe it's because his story's not over yet, unlike with Steve and Tony. You know, his story is actually still unfurling. So maybe we will get more of a conclusion with him. But I just wasn't satisfied with the idea of him essentially running away, which is what he was doing.
And some, you know, it's one of those things where Thor Ragnarok, possibly one of the best Marvel films, bloody hilarious. Mm. And now we've gone from the sublime to the ridiculous a little bit with Endgame.
Yeah. Also, I was really annoyed by the fact that Loki didn't come back.
Yes.
Because I was waiting for him, to, even if only in just a small kind of little scene, but for him to come back to help Thor. Because there was a whole, you know, the sun will shine on us again, brother. Which, again, Loki's about to get his own new series. And Thor's not gone from the Marvel Cinematic Universe. So perhaps we will have something.
Yeah.
They you know, they meet up again. But at the same time, I just thought, oh no, please.
Yeah, that was a sort of, that left a kind of empty space. Like, there weren't huge empty spaces, but there were a couple of little bits for me that just didn't quite, as in, you didn't fully satisfy me there. Talking of the sublime to the ridiculous, I felt like that a little bit about Hulk as well.
Yeah.
I feel they've really removed the pathos of the man versus monster at war with something within himself, at war with part of his own psyche, and they've reduced it to something that's a bit sort of, oh, hey, I'm green and I'm a babe magnet now. I'm famous, you know? And it's just, it cheapened the whole thing, because it was quite a tragic love story between him and, I can't remember her name, Elizabeth somebody.
Betty?
Yeah, and it's just, I just felt that they'd taken his, I mean, I know you can't have every single hero being the tragic hero in that particular film, because they all have tragic backstories, that's how they became heroes, but it was just quite frustrating, the direction they went with Hulk.
Well, I also think, like, he was not really Hulk, was he?
No. There were funny moments, like the bit where they've gone back through time and he's kind of like, oh, you need to be Loki here, Hulk, which involves Hulk ripping his shirt off and going, yay, Hulk, smash. And he's like really not enthusiastic about it.
Just so unenthusiastic about it,
It's like so token, but and it was really funny, but...
Yeah, no, that was funny, but at the same time, I wanted to see Hulk. That was Bruce Banner, you know? That was Bruce Banner, that was
Hulk. In a Hulk suit, yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, and I just thought...
It doesn't feel like the two sides of this guy's warring psyche were actually fully integrated in this, you know, Hulk that actually is verbal now and not just like an angry teenager in a green suit, which is basically what Hulk is. Because Hulk is basically a metaphor for puberty for boys.
Well, the thing is, like, I'm trying to think now and I can't even... I can't really think of any... A particular, I can't think of Hulk in the battle. No images come to mind.
He wasn't doing Hulk stuff. He was doing Bruce Banner stuff. Like when he was talking to the wizard about needing to borrow the stone.
Yeah,
that was Bruce Banner all the way through, even though he was dressed as Hulk, kind of thing.
Yeah, but that's the thing is that. I don't know. I felt been rather cool if we'd had a little bit of Hulk as well. A little bit of Hulk returning, since Hulk basically disappeared after his defeat with Thanos. Yes. And, and never came back. And the fact of the matter is that Hulk is a different character to Bruce Banner.
Yeah.
And he was just not present at all. And I have no problems with seeing Bruce Banner, but I wanted to see Hulk. And we didn't really get him. But there are Bruce Banner scenes. That being said, Bruce Banner trying to get Ant-Man in the past before Tony comes to help. and they turn him into a baby and an old man. That was hilarious.
Great. So it's like somebody's peed in my pants. Anyway, yeah, that was.
I don't know if it was funny. Baby me or older me.
Could have been either. Could have gone either way.
Could have just been me. That was quite good.
Moving on to the one I have the biggest problem with, it's Black Widow. And one of it's probably the third big Avenger that has now been moved out and passed the torch onto the new team. And I don't think the Marvel Cinematic Universe has ever done very well by Black Widow. Unfortunately, she's been used far too much as a sexy, poseable action doll. And then, when she really starts acquiring character and agency of her own, and she's clearly, I mean, she's probably the best one in some ways, because she doesn't have powers. She was part of the Super Soldier program, yes, but she just turns up and fucking kicks things, and she's competent, and she holds her own with the rest of them. And it just really pisses me off that she was never ever given enough space to be anything more than that, and then was sort of demeaned into just being a love interest in one respect, or just being the one who could calm the Hulk down because, you know, mystical female pheromones, etc. And then in Endgame again, they've tried to make it look like she's got lots of agency, but it's too little too late, really, and in a universe where actually we've kind of got a dearth of main female characters. We will talk about that one particular scene later, but generally we don't have main female characters, which is my big problem with Marvel.
Yeah, and again, there's a particular scene we need to talk about. But it must be said, that I liked the way they wrote her in this movie. As in, I liked the way she spoke. I liked her dialogue. But as you say, it was too little too late. And she dies halfway through. And I did feel her death. That was the important thing. I definitely did feel her death. But I also...
It was unnecessary.
Yeah.
I mean, it didn't... honestly... could she do more good alive than Hawkeye? Yes. Not that I particularly wanted Hawkeye to die, but, you know, people say, well, he had kids and a family. It's like, yeah, well, Tony Stark had kids and a family, so, eh. That's hardly the barrier. And Hawkeye had reacted to half the universe dying by going out and killing more people. Just gone completely over to the dark side. And it's not that he doesn't deserve a chance to redeem himself, but maybe his redemption should have been throwing himself off that fucking cliff. Not that he doesn't try, in fairness.
It also plays into this narrative whereby her life was less important because she didn't have offspring. Now, that sounds a bit silly, but, you know, considering there was also this big controversy about very poor wording choice, and I'm sure that's not what they were trying to say, but due to very poor wording choice, this impression that she was a monster because she was barren, because she'd been, you know, forced operated on so that she could never... Yeah, basically. Now, I honestly, in that movie, I didn't actually think that's what they were trying to say. I think it was meant to be about the fact that, you know, she was a killing machine who was literally made... to only be good at killing to the extent that they, you know, physically did certain things to her so that nothing would ever get in the way of her killing. And also because Bruce was the one who said, you know, I could never give you kids and stuff like that. And she was turning around saying, well, I couldn't have them anyway. Though, of course, because adoption is not a thing. Anyway.
I always felt like that was a tiny bit in there. It was so out of place. And it's like, why on earth are you giving us that in the story anyway? It's not really relevant to what's going on. You forced her into the position of awkward love interest with Hulk, who, let's face it, was always mooning after one person anyway. And then you bring in the whole sort of, well, do I really have value as a person, as a woman, as someone who once possessed a uterus if I no longer have it? And it's just bullshit.
Yeah.
Utter bullshit.
Yeah. And so her dying and it being okay for her to die, like it being the right choice. I don't know. I felt like she didn't need to die. And I love Hawkeye. I've always loved Hawkeye as a character. So, you know, I would have been very upset if he'd died as well, regardless of the fact that he'd become Ronin. And yet, at the same time, I actually felt it would have been better for both of their character arcs if he was the one who died and she was the one who'd lived, particularly because she's kind of wanted to end it for a while, if that makes sense. Yeah. She's been unhappy, and I kind of felt like that shouldn't have been it then. It shouldn't have been, I've been unhappy, I want to die, therefore it's okay for me to die. Just the same with Tony Stark. They allowed him not to want to die before they killed him.
Yeah.
But her, on the other hand, it was just tragic.
And I think the thing again, is, you're right, they wrote her really well for that film, and they gave her great dialogue, and she finally had a part where she was kind of the centre of the team for a bit. She was keeping everybody else going. And then it's a case of, oh, well, we'll get halfway through the film, and, well, Hawkeye needs to feel that he's redeemed, and Bruce Banner needs to feel that he missed an opportunity at love, maybe? I don't know. So we'll kill her off. And it's that classic thing of, we kill off a woman. It's fridge adjacent, basically. We kill off a woman in order to make a man feel something. And it just fucks me off.
Yeah, it was very annoying, because actually every bit that Hawkeye did in that film, they could have done. The other thing that annoys me is that at no point nobody went, oh, hey, Nebula didn't say, oh, by the way, if you want to go and get the stone, you're going to have to murder someone. Like, they went up there and they had no idea.
Yeah, why didn't nobody tell them? Why didn't you take someone else with you who perhaps didn't matter quite so much? I know that's not how sacrifice works.
But yeah, but also the other thing that really amuses me is the fact that it's just, they're like, you have to, you know, lose something, the thing that you love the most. I'm like, well, Hawkeye lost his entire family.
So,
do you have to lose it, like, right now? Like, do you have to kill it now? That was never said in the rules.
So, yeah, it's frustrating. They kind of, I mean, let's be honest, Scarlett Johansson does an excellent job of the character.
I think possibly my favourite scene. Hello?
I'm still here. Keep going.
Yeah. I think possibly my favourite scene was when they're all trying to figure out when they can travel back to. And there's just that scene where they're all lying in New York at the same time.
Yeah.
And I really loved that, because I loved how comfortable she was. And I think it was also pretty significant, because up until this point, especially with Civil War and things like that, you know, a lot of people have made the criticism that actually it wasn't really that difficult, because they didn't feel like a family, you know, even though it's this whole, oh, well, they're such good friends, you know, they've got a family together, and it's like, well, do they really? And that was the first scene of just her lying beside Tony and Banner, and them just theorizing. And it looked really comfy. And it was the first time that I was actually sold on the idea of that it was important to remember that she had a particular relationship with Tony Stark.
Yeah.
In that she's introduced in his movie. She was technically on his side when they were on Civil War, until she kind of walked out on him, basically. But they do have this kind of this relationship, and they have opened up to each other about certain things. So it was nice to see her getting to just have friendships. You know, we saw that her with Steve, we saw her with Tony, and that was nice, because it was nothing to do with love, just friendships. And obviously her very significant friendship with Hawkeye.
Yeah. Okay, let's talk about Ant-Man, who is kind of a minor Marvel character in the MCU, and yet has sort of stepped into some very big shoes here.
He has. I love Ant-Man, actually. The movies are just fun. They're nothing groundbreaking, but they are just fun. And he is just a nice character.
I kind of like the fact that he's this talented thief who sort of blundered his way into a super suit, you know?
Yeah. And I think the other thing is that the problem is that he's surrounded by geniuses, but you forget that he does, he's an engineer.
Yeah, he's not stupid,
Or he's
is he?
something like that.
Yeah, so.
He's not stupid. He's done pretty well, actually. And he's incredibly brave. And I have to say that, his relationship with his daughter is really touching.
Yeah.
And they did have him getting to see his grown-up daughter. That was actually really beautiful. I did tear up. I was like, yay, because I loved them in the Ant-Man films.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. So and he was kind of a nice addition to the team. He's not one of the heavyweights, really, although perhaps we'll see more of him now that the torch has been passed again.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
And they literally could not have done the entire plan without him because he just happened to come along and say, "Oh yeah, well, you know, we could do this." And then there's the whole sort of inner quantum zone, and Tony Stark is like,
Yeah.
"Oh no, we can't do time travel. What are you doing?" Pepper Potts comes in, "What are you doing?" "Oh, I'm inventing time travel. I've worked out how to do it." It's like,
It's just like, I
right, then.
solved it. What? But also, when they decided that they were going to do the experimentation, he was the one who stepped forward to do it.
Yeah.
And I think the thing is that he could have turned around and said, no, I don't need to. Yeah, he'd lost hope. Okay, but he had his daughter.
Yeah.
And he was actually risking a lot. He's just a genuinely good person who stepped forward and said, I do that. And I think there's still a lot more you can do with this character.
Yeah.
But yeah, he had a small, funny, but very significant role. And I did feel like he stood up to the test. He definitely was an Avenger in this.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, not really an Avenger, but stepping over the line onto the white hat side at the 11th hour, we have Nebula.
Yes. Now,
Who.
other than Nebula, they would have to murder someone. Thanks, Nebula. She's had a really interesting character journey.
She really has, after being completely indoctrinated by Thanos, and with that, not just being brainwashed, but being part of that particular mindset whereby you're constantly after a parent's approval when you can never reach it, even as an adult, when you're desperately trying to get that one moment's genuine approval from this parent figure, and they're always denying it to
Yeah.
you. You know,
Yeah.
that tends to happen to people. If you can't break that cycle, you become quite a damaged person, which she obviously has.
Yeah.
So seeing her break out of that was really satisfying.
I've got to admit, I really enjoyed seeing her playing with Tony right at the beginning,
Yeah.
where she's learning to play. She's never amused herself in that way before, and she's just so totally awkward about it. And then you see that compassionate side of her coming out, and you see how much she's changed and how much she's developed, and you realize that, over 5 years, she's stepped up, she's become that hero, and she misses her sister desperately. And she's kind of managed to develop and get away from all the damage that Thanos inflicted on her. And I think the fact that, yeah, you have these two nebulas at one point, you can really see that contrast. Thumbs up to Karen Gillian. She
Yeah,
did a very good performance.
definitely. And in the end, obviously, Nebula ki literally kills her old self, which, you know, again, physics-wise doesn't hold up, but ignore
No.
that because it worked in the context of the show, the film, and symbolically as well. And also, she got to
Yeah.
save Gamora, which is the other thing that kind of annoys me about Black Widow, because we can have Gamora back, but we can't have Black Widow. So, yeah.
Yeah, great.
I do actually obviously like Gamora, but it irritates me when they hit a reset button with a character and you realise it's all to do again. And I think that's where I feel a bit conflicted about Gamora right now.
Yeah, I completely agree. And, you know, notably, she wasn't there at the end with the Guardians of the Galaxy. And yeah, I am kind of a little bit annoyed by that because, as you say, it's a bit of a reset, but not to mention the fact that it completely doesn't make sense at all in terms of
the space-time continuum.
The time travel. Nebula killed herself, but and yet somehow they killed past Thanos, so how did they... But what? it leaves... but I think let's just ignore all of that.
Let's ignore quantum theory for now. Anyway, Captain Marvel, who had about 6 minutes of screen time in the entire film after all that big talk and promising they did at the end of Infinity War. So that was slightly frustrating. And the other thing is, after that amazing Captain Marvel film, she's basically just used as a fucking cannon for all the time she is on screen. And she's so much more nuanced than that. It was so annoying.
That being said, that moment where the ships turn and the cannons are suddenly firing into the sky, I was like, oh boy.
Yeah.
That was cinematically amazing. And you know, she went one-on-one with Thanos and it took, and she had to get, you know, she would have won, except, you know, she got full blasted with an entire Infinity Stone.
Yeah.
And that only felled her momentarily, you know what I mean? It was amazing. And I think the problem was that she is really incredibly powered up. She is the strongest of them all. And so they did have to find a way to keep her out of the way, because otherwise everything would have been over far too quickly.
Well, yeah, I mean, it was the Avengers on Earth. And kind of like, yeah. She was taking the rest of the universe. I'm like, so what are you doing, Captain Marvel? I was like, oh, well, you know all those other planets that you've never heard of? I'm dealing with those.
And we may see more of that, you know, later. I don't know whether she's going to have another movie or stuff like that, but obviously there's a lot more you can do with this character. And with the, you know, with the fact that Thor is now disappearing, and we've lost Cap and we've lost Iron Man, you know.
And Black Widow.
Captain Marvel and Black Widow. Captain Marvel's female Avenger. The only female Avenger. But no, Captain Marvel stepping in. To be the new leader of the Avengers, to take her role as, you know, the leader of the Avengers, would make sense. But yeah, I can understand that it was very tricky because they do have, she's a very highly powered individual, and they obviously couldn't have it done too quick. Which I think kind of leads us to that point about the women scene.
Oh, I think it does. Now, okay, if you haven't obviously seen the film and you're wondering what we're talking about, first of all, okay, clearly you don't give a shit about spoilers, so fair play. Second of all, they literally had a sort of a 30-second shot of all the amazing, awesome female Avenger and superhero types all together. So you had all the chicks from Black Panther, you had Captain Marvel, you had Pepper Potts in her super Iron Man type suit as well, which was interesting. You had Valkyrie on her winged horse, which actually the winged horse made me very happy. So you had all of them together, and it was this beautiful shot, but again it veered too close on one hand to, hey, look at all these sexy poseable action figures wearing their sexy fighting gear all walking together. And it's a case of, the Marvel Cinematic Universe does have female superheroes, and I'm like, yeah, but the thing is, you squeezed it into like 20 to 30 seconds of the last film instead of like spreading them out through the last 10 years.
And the other thing is that they're too late. Yeah, it's this look at this girl power kind of scene. I'm like, none of these people have spoken to each other.
Nope.
None of these people have relationships. Oh no, they were friends in the background. You know, you couldn't even have a single shot of that, of them even standing together throughout the entire Marvel Cinematic Universe. These people, they don't have relationships. I mean, you have Shuri, but she wasn't even in that shot. Nakoya wasn't in that. Okoye was in the shot. But it's like, yeah, none of these people are friends. There is no nuance between them. you can say girl power until you go blue in the face, but just saying girl power does not equate feminism. And actually, that, you know, they would, it was a shot about, you know, and it meant to be an empowering shot, but all it did was highlight the fact that they had spent so little time developing these characters as any form of team, and yet tried to portray them as some form of team, which really kind of pissed me off a little bit.
Yeah, on one hand, it was like visually spectacular. On the other hand, it was kind of like, oh, come on, do you expect us to fall for that? We're not stupid.
Yeah, I felt like it was something they did that they were patting themselves on the back for, and I'm like, yeah, okay, pat yourselves on the back for doing something which was visually stunning, but don't try and pretend that this is feminism.
Yeah.
Don't try and claim, like, look what we did, we have this awesome shot, and I'm like, be quiet. You killed the only female Avenger and kept the other one out in space for the majority of the film. Don't play this game with me.
Again, I call bullshit on that. So.
To Spider-Man, a small but epic little moment in the movie, and who did the Tom Holland's performance, considering he was in the movie for like 3 minutes. It was bloody good, actually.
It was good, definitely. We should also just talk about Thanos briefly.
Yes.
Character with no development, which was kind of the point, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Because he just represents nihilism and extreme myopic viewpoint, and I don't know, it was just... His goal is just so fucking weird, isn't it? I want to wipe out half the universe. Yeah, but why? Because it's balancing things. Yeah, but on what measure is it balancing something? It's so spurious.
It is. And I also just like the fact that he seems to be able to, with these Infinity Stones, destroy half of all living creatures, and yet he can't double the resources.
Yeah. It's like that bit never occurred to him.
And then he changes that. He says, you know, I'm going to redo it, but I'm going to make it so that, you know, I'm ruling them and stuff like that. And I'm like, but that's your view. What you want is just completely changed then. Oh, what are you trying to do? Do you want to be the ruler? I don't understand.
And it's weird because you see him die twice in that film and it still doesn't feel like enough. Not because he's hated either, but just because he's kind of like... You can't hate him because there's nothing there really to get a grip on. I mean, the way he treats his daughters is probably the thing you could hate him most over, because it's the thing you could understand the most.
Yeah, but I just didn't understand his character at all.
I mean, I'm not sure.
I felt like I understand it. No, I felt like I understood it a little bit more in the last movie. Whereas this one, you know, you see his younger version and you're like, what do you want?
Yeah.
What is motivating you here? And I don't know. That being said, the look of horror on his face when Captain Marvel first shows up, and also the look of horror on his face when those portals open up and the whole army come through, I could have fed on that for days. It was beautiful.
Yeah, this is true. It's kind of weird at the beginning when they're kind of like, yeah, we've tracked Thanos down, he's on this planet, and you turn up there and he's like some retired Roman emperor going about his vineyard.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, oh, I pick my own quinces and plums. And it's like, right, okay, so you've lost it then.
Yeah.
But yes, that scene was exceptionally good. Credit to, a little shout out to one of my favourite characters who didn't really have a lot to do in the movie except create lots and lots of portals, which is Dr. Stephen Strange. I mean, admittedly, he picked the future, which gave everybody a chance, but...
yeah I think he has one line.
He has one line. I mean,
and
I'd
then one significant gesture.
I'd love to see another Doctor Strange film. I realize that there are problems with the whole setup, but I just really love the character. Anyway, back on track, let's just do a little bit of a chat about that particular, the actual battle, the final battle, and then, you know, sum up on what we really liked and what we didn't.
Yeah. I did like the whole kind of thing where it was Tony, Steve and Thor stepping in to fight Thanos. And that was, you know, very symbolic, but, you know, it draws back. They were the originals. You know, they're the three heavy hitters, if you will.
I'm going to keep saying Black Widow until I'm blue in the face.
You know what I mean? If it isn't there. No. But I mean, in terms of the Avengers, and I know we didn't say we're going to look beyond the cinematic universe, but just for a second, in terms of the Avengers, when you think of the Avengers, they're the front people. Iron Man, Thor, and Captain America. Natasha comes in and out as Black Widow, as an Avenger. And obviously she was significant as an Avenger, but there was always this sense that she was kind of... She was Nick Fury's lackey, and she was a spy. And she wasn't a heavy hitter in terms of when it came to the battle, her strengths... smart and quick, but she wasn't a soldier, not in the same way. And so having those three step forward, I think it was quite significant. And it would have been really nice if actually it wasn't just those three, if we'd also had the Hulk, and if we'd also had Black Widow and Hawkeye, and we'd actually had the whole ensemble. But I guess that just wasn't possible on account of the fact they seem to have killed Hulk, and they definitely killed Natasha, and Hawkeye was just running around.
The ones that annoy me, I mean, the overall battle is great, not just because it's visually spectacular, but because they managed to pretty much give everyone a part that is based on their strengths. That's a huge accomplishment, because when you put two superheroes in the same ring, even if they're fighting an enemy, then they're constantly in danger of upstaging each other. So it takes talented writers to be able to say, no, they're equally significant, they have different strengths, I don't need this character to draw all the glory themselves. And that's something that people struggle with. So actually having such a huge cast and all of them get their little moment, almost, then that was a huge achievement. What really bugged me was the fact that I think if anybody really deserved to get a hit, a couple of significant hits in on Thanos, Gamora and Nebula did, and yet they didn't.
They did not, no.
So that was annoying.
Definitely. Also, I felt like Star-Lord was entirely useless in that battle. Contributed nothing.
Yeah. I have to say that as visually spectacular and well choreographed as it generally was, in general, there's a lame-ass use of the female and black cast in that.
Yeah.
It just in general. And it's very noticeable that, or it was very noticeable to me that the black cast got very little screen time, and the women probably then got the second least amount of screen time after that. So again, MCU, do better. Okay.
Yeah. That all being said, I enjoyed it. I liked it.
I did.
Not gonna lie.
I really did like it a lot. I did enjoy it. I wasn't just sat there going, oh my God, I can't believe you did this. I mean, the critical stuff came later when I was looking back and thinking, oh yeah. but at the time, I really enjoyed it. And I think, generally speaking, the MCU kind of pisses all over the DC films, with the exception of perhaps Wonder Woman and maybe Shazam, just because they are massive character-led pieces and they're true to that, and that's a ballsy decision, and yet one that they've made work. So they definitely deserve accolades for that.
Yeah, definitely. And it certainly felt like an appropriate movie to close off the Avengers, that generation franchise.
That
you now feel, I feel comfortable going forward and seeing new Avengers stuff, as in with new characters.
Yeah.
I'm also going to say that there was one character who I was just really pleased to see, and that was Jarvis. We just saw Jarvis for just half of a fraction of a second, and I was happy.
I must have missed that.
That sounds really stupid.
Seriously, I must have missed that. I thought he was like dead and gone forever.
Because we got Jarvis when Tony went back in time, and Jarvis was there with Howard Stark.
Oh right, no, sorry, I thought you meant proper Jarvis.
No, not that. But that was That's actually original Jarvis. And I was just there. I was just happy to see Jarvis. Okay, or rather, I was happy to hear Jarvis. I really loved Jarvis in the Peggy Carter series as well, Agent Carter.
Yeah.
That was just actually a really nice touch because I missed Jarvis as a character within the MCU. I never warmed to Friday, but I always missed Jarvis. So it was nice just to hear or see Jarvis again very briefly at the end there. I certainly feel like they managed to tick most of the boxes in that we got at least a cameo from every character that you'd want to get a cameo from, except Loki, who did not turn up in the final battle, which I was really disappointed about.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, it's such a huge thing that you're never going to completely satisfy everybody. But I think they did a pretty good job of, you know, mostly giving everybody at least a little, as you say, cameo, doing something that their strengths lent them towards.
And one thing that would have been interesting is that at one point you have Steve picks up Mjolnir, and Thor's actually kind of thrilled about it, just goes, "I knew it!"
Yeah.
And I thought, yeah, okay. But actually, I was kind of a bit annoyed by it, because I was just like, really? Does it have to be Steve? And because I know he is worthy, but interesting if it had been somebody else who'd picked up Mjolnir instead.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know, Jane Foster?
Yeah, you know, one of the chicks, maybe.
Yeah. Or even Shuri. If Shuri had turned up and picked up Mjolnir, I would have been so thrilled. But you know what I mean? It could have literally been anybody else, and that would have actually been quite interesting instead. What would have been nice is if they hadn't killed Black Widow, and she was totally torn up about the fact that that Hawkeye had died, and she felt unworthy, and then she was the one who picked up Mjolnir. That would have been pretty awesome. But alas, it's still very epic to see Steve Rogers with Mjolnir, and I did like that. No, no, you take the small one, I'll take the big one line. Did amuse me. But yeah, so that they could have done things differently, and maybe I would have liked for them to have done things differently, but I think all in all, wrapped it up very well, and they tied up all those loose ends, apart from the bajillion they created with the time travel.
Yes, but you know, that's good. That's a fresh new batch for the meat grinder, as it were. And I know what you mean in the sense of they closed off the loops well enough that I can go comfortably forward and see new Avengers in with new characters and, you know, new Captain America and everything, and not feel that I'm being cheated, if that makes sense.
And not feel like, oh, but I want to see that person instead. Like, I feel like that's been nicely closed off.
Yeah, agreed. So overall, really positive. Yes, there are a few gripes, and there are things that the MCU really does need to start fucking addressing, ideally from the beginning of whatever new series of films they do. Because then hopefully when they do another Endgame, way, way off in another 10 years' time, hopefully they won't be in the situation where they're having to cobble together things too little too late.
Yeah, absolutely. You know what would have also been nice to do in MCU?
But
at the Endgame? If the Defenders had shown up. Not Danny. We can put Danny to the side. But it would have been nice to see Daredevil and Jessica Jones just turn up looking really confused on the battle. Where are we?
Yes. Right. Anyway, we have overrun very slightly, but it was definitely worth it. So we're going to put the MCU down there.
Definitely. Before we go, it is time for our Dissecting Dragons recommendation of the week. And this week I've got a bit of a silly one for you. This week I'm recommending Detective Pikachu, which is an incredibly silly film. And I did leave the cinema going, what? Particularly the ending, which just felt very random. But cinematically, it's beautiful. And in terms of creating a live action movie with Pokemon, I think it was a massive success. I think they did the designs very well. The humor was brilliant. Who would have thought Ryan Reynolds could make such a cute Pikachu? He really did. He succeeded there. It was laugh out loud funny. And I actually got that sense of wonder, which you're supposed to get, in, you know, with this fantastical world. You suddenly feel like, oh gosh, I kind of wish I lived there. So they definitely took that right. It's a fun movie, definitely worth seeing if you haven't yet, or if you're debating whether you should go and see it. Go and see it. You won't regret it.
Okay, then.
And on that note, guys, we'll say thanks very much for listening, and we'll catch you guys next week.
Yeah, thanks and goodbye.
Bye.
You've been listening to Dissecting Dragons, the speculative fiction podcast. You can follow our podcast at podbean.com or from iTunes. For more information, visit our Facebook page at www.facebook.com/dissectingreaders, or check out our author websites at jaironside.com and madelinevaughan.com. Please note, no dragons were harmed during the making of this podcast.